So welcome to week 13 of our How Einstein Would Get Pregnant blog series. This week, the focus is on music and how music can really impact our levels of stress and really induce a different state of being through relaxation. Music is a big part of our programs, and music is just a big part of our philosophy as well. We've written about it in the past. I am very pleased to have with me today Chuck Wild, who is a composer, musical composer. He goes under the name also of Liquid Mind. You may have seen his albums on iTunes. He hits regularly the number one spot on the New Age chart. I would describe Chuck's music as, these are my words, it's a combination of, it's very meditative, it's slow, it's relaxing, but yet it's rich and complex, is how I would go about describing it. And I discovered Chuck when I was first starting to record our programs, and very happy to have created a relationship now with Chuck, and we hope to do at least one or maybe two collaborative projects together, where I would be very lucky to use his music. So I'm very happy to have him on. Chuck, you've worked with such people in the past as Michael Jackson and Frank Zappa, and the fact that you have created Liquid Mind to be of service to yourself first and foremost in dealing with anxiety and stress, I think actually mirrors and mirrors kind of how I came to create Circle and Bloom as well, having gone through infertility and came out of it a different person and wanting to help others. And I think there's similarities with our background. So I think that's kind of neat. But if you could, Chuck, so first of all, welcome to our program.
Thank you. I'm really glad to be here, Joanne. Thanks.
Thanks. So if you could, Chuck, just maybe talk in your own words really about your background and how you got to, you know, really start composing, because you did spend a lot of time in, I would call it television and movie compositions. Is that correct? And then you found yourself working like a crazy man and said, okay, this has got to stop.
Well, yes. The music industry is a harsh master, I will say, especially the last few years as digital downloading has really cut into, you know, folks not wanting to pay for music anymore, the young ones anyway. But I guess I started out in the music industry in the 70s after I got out of the Navy. I was a U.S. Navy officer, but decided that music was a better fit for me. And in the mid-80s and mid to late 80s, I started working somewhat in network television. I was signed as a staff writer to a company called Lorimar Telepictures, which was actually the largest television production company in the world at the time. Mm-hmm. And they were bought up very quickly after that by Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. So then I was signed to Warner's. And there were a lot of high-profile jobs. I was primarily a staff songwriter, actually, not a composer at the time. And I was asked to co-compose music for a show called Max Headroom. Mm-hmm. And Max Headroom was like the first animated character on network TV. It was an ABC show that won an Emmy, actually. And in 1987, the fall of 1987, the workload, because the show got behind in production, the workload got extremely heavy. We were working 20-hour days, 7 days a week, for 3 months, which looking back is inhumane. I thought I was getting a lot of money, but I ended up spending every penny of it on doctors in the meantime. And at the same time, a lot of my friends had died of AIDS in a 5-year period. More than 50 people that I knew had died, so I was suffering from an enormous amount of grief. Family members had cancer and went on to pass away as well. It was just really my first experience with the ups and downs of life, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm.
The first 40 years of my life were pretty smooth looking back. And then, you know, life happens, and it does. So when Max Headroom was canceled in the winter of 1987, that was actually one of the best things that ever happened to me. But I thought to myself, I knew that I was experiencing a lot of symptoms, like extreme tenseness in my shoulders and just feeling like my skin was crawling almost, hyperventilation, feeling like I couldn't catch my breath. I had no idea that these were symptoms of anxiety. And during the last week of Max Headroom, I was sitting in what's called a spotting session with the producer of the show, Peter Wag, and my co-composer, Michael Honig. And we were sitting there, and I just started getting this feeling of impending doom. I had never heard of a panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what it was, but I was having one. My heart started racing. And they thought maybe, you know, I thought I was having a heart attack. That's what a lot of people with panic attacks, when they start experiencing, you know, the tension and you get lightheaded and hyperventilation, fast heartbeat and so forth. And so they rushed me to a hospital and they gave me all kinds of tests. I mean, literally, they put me in the producer's Porsche and he drove way faster than I'd like to remember down through the side streets of Hollywood to the nearest facility. And the doctor told me that day, I had a very enlightened doctor. And after he did all the tests, he said, "There's nothing wrong with you." And I'm going like, "But why can't I catch my breath?"
Right.
And he said, "There's something called a panic attack that I want to tell you about." And then he held up in his two hands, and I'll never forget this moment. He held up a bottle of pills in one hand. And in the other hand, he held up a sheet of paper. And he said, "You know, for what you have, Chuck, these two work equally as well." He said, "You can take pills or you can take this one sheet of meditation instruction."
Wow.
He said, "There's only one letter difference between medication and meditation."
Wow.
And that was a turning point.
I think you've got a great doctor, by the way.
Well, it was just one of these urgency clinics.
Right.
I saw him again a few years later and gave him one of my albums.
Right.
But that led me to healing. I was really, really ill as well. I had something that I don't really talk a lot about, but I had spontaneous rheumatoid arthritis. At that same period in time, about a week later, I became unable to walk.
Oh, boy.
Both of my legs didn't work. Both of my arms didn't work. I went to the doctors. They said it's cortisone shots for you, possibly for the rest of your life. And I went to a friend of mine, another recording artist, actually, by the name of Jeff Kingfisher, and whose music, incidentally, is beautiful. And Jeff suggested that I visit a Taoist master here in Los Angeles, a 38th generation Chinese healer by the name of Daoxing Ni. So I went to see Master Ni, and because I did not want to take the medication again. I didn't want to get cortisone shots at such a young age, especially. And I went to Master Ni, and he started me on a program of acupuncture, which lasted for a year. I took herbs every day for a year. I went to acupuncture every day for probably 6 to 8 weeks. And then I went 3 days a week for 6 months, and then I went 2 days a week for the rest of that year. And at the end of the year, I had complete use of my limbs, no signs of whatever this was. It was my immune system attacking myself, I suppose. I don't really know the details. But it was very unusual, and I've never had any recurrence of that. That was, what, 24 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he also, Master Ni, also suggested that I start meditating. And so I figured, well, two people have told me to meditate. I'm going to start doing it. And I started doing it, and it was really the only time I found any peace. Sometimes I would meditate for an hour a day. Nothing but just the simplest clearing meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I would, which is what that one piece of paper said. It said, breathe in, count the number one silently to yourself. Breathe out, count the number of two. Count the number two. And that's what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked up to about an hour a day, and those were the only times I was having panic attacks almost intractably. Almost the whole day. I'd wake up in the middle of the night with that. It was really a miserable time. And I got into therapy to figure out why I would work such horrible hours. And one of the, which is a whole other story, but one of the counselors suggested to me that I write the kind of music that was the way I would like to feel.
Mm.
If I could just imagine what it would feel like to be calm and relaxed again after this really, really rough period in my life, if I could imagine what that music was, then to make a piece of music. And I still couldn't even imagine. I would sit at the keyboards and just play something really fast because I was wired. I was also doing a lot of coffee. I quit drinking coffee or any caffeinated beverages in January of 1988, and I have not had any caffeine since then, except perhaps a little bit of chocolate.
that doesn't count.
That's a minuscule amount. No tea, no coffee. I still couldn't write the music, and I... part of my therapy, because I became agoraphobic, actually, and was afraid to leave my house. The people who were working for me quit. They were so freaked out at the time. And I was just sitting here, and I did make it out and started getting into therapy, so I would leave my house. And my therapist said, you need to go on a little mini vacation. You haven't had a vacation in years. And I said, well, I think I can make it down to Laguna Beach. It's only 70 miles. So I went down to Laguna Beach, and I noticed, I started sitting on the beach, and I noticed that I immediately became calm.
Mm.
I went, what is this? Nothing's really changed. I mean, sort of, but it was very, very dramatic. And so I sat on the rocks for hours and hours, and even fell asleep on some of the rocks that in Laguna Beach that kind of stretch out over the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, the sound of the liquid is calming my mind.
Mm.
And that was the moment that I came up with the title Liquid Mind. And I immediately knew I can do music like this. The music needs to be continuous, needs to be kind of low and rich and full. It needs to never stop.
Right.
Even though, you know, the rule in music composition is let it breathe, put space, you know. But that's for pop music.
Right.
And so unknowingly, I created my first piece of sedative music. It's on the very first Liquid Mind album. And I was literally having panic attacks as I was holding down these long chords. I was going, oh.
Oh, geez, yeah.
It was really, really miserable. But the piece was 30 minutes long, and I gave it to the counselor, a gal by the name of Susan Skye, who I think lives, I don't know, in another state now. I gave her a copy of it, and she thought it was wonderful and started using it. She said, you know, you should give away a bunch of copies of this to your friends who are sick as well.
Mm-hmm.
It will help them relax. And I didn't even have the concept of relaxation music. This is 1988,
mm-hmm.
late in 1988. So I made about 200 or 300 copies, and I went around to all the AIDS hospices and gave it to family members who I had who were had cancer at the time and so forth, and the feedback was really wonderful on it. And so I thought, well, maybe I need to do some more. But then the old paying the bills thing
gets in the way.
Came up. Exactly. It got a little bit in the way. And I started working again, but I kept just giving the music away. And I did that for about 3 or 4 years. I did a few other pieces, I think. And I just basically gave it away. And then some of my friends started saying, you know, you should distribute this music on a wider basis. It's really unusual music that helps people with anxiety.
Right.
And people who were undergoing cancer treatment was telling me it made it easier for them to do that and so forth. So in 1993, I called a consultant who helped me set up a little label, and I had no funds really to start it. I was heartsick because, and she's a wonderful consultant, Suzanne Doucet, who also records this kind of music. And Suzanne told me, she said, you know, Chuck, it's going to cost you about $120,000, $150,000 to start a label and to really get it going out there. And I went, Suzanne, I don't begin to have that kind of money.
Mm-hmm.
I just spent $100,000 on doctors in, you know, in a 2-year period. And almost a day or two after that, I got a phone call I don't think it was out of the blue, from my old friend Bruce Swedien, who's a 5-time Grammy winner, and he had produced one of the Missing Persons albums. I was in this pop group called Missing Persons back in the early 80s on Capitol Records, and Bruce had produced one of our albums, and he called me. And I was literally, an hour before that, I was sitting and meditating and going, how am I going to get this money? You know, I have this money. I'm going to get it. And Bruce called, and I said, hi, Bruce, how you doing? And he said, I'm working with The Glove. And I knew who he was talking about, Michael Jackson. That was Michael's nickname. And I said, oh, cool. And he said, what are you doing, Chuck? And I said, I just had this flash, and I went, I'm working with you. And he said, great, you start tomorrow. And that led on and off to 4 years of work. And Michael was very fair about pay. A lot of people in the music industry, I can't honestly say that, but Michael was very patient and focused and wanted me to program sounds for him, to create a vocabulary of sounds that had not been heard by the human ear before. And he sent me some really amazing computer musical instruments that were kind of new at the time. And I started doing that work. And I took that money, every penny I made from Michael, and I put it into starting my label. I ran Chuck Wild Records from 1994 through 2004. And about 2 years after I started putting the albums out, I started getting unsolicited emails. And I got literally hundreds of emails in a pretty short period of time. Well, actually back then, I'd say only about half of them were emails. They were letters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
People were sending me letters. As a matter of fact, I don't think there were a lot of emails to begin with, but that really accelerated in the late 90s as email became popular. But these people were telling me things like, I can't take pain medication because I have bone cancer and it's terribly painful, and I listen to your music and it makes me calm and relaxed. And I was like, I was really shocked. I tried mm-hmm. to answer every letter, and I just said, thank you. You know, I appreciate the feedback. And the music wasn't selling much at the time. This was like 1994, 1995, 1996. And I was kind of thinking, well, I've done a couple of albums and that'll be it. But then I started getting all this feedback and I started thinking, wow, this is really something,
right.
You know, feels like a win-win. And even if there's not money in it, this is pretty amazing. And I remember how miserable it was to have anxiety. So I decided, you know, I just made a firm commitment to keep the label going. And in 2004, it really became so much work that, you know, too much administrative work, and I had three employees and so forth, and it was really just too much for me to do. And my old friends, Terrence Yallop and his wife, Karen Kale, for 30 years have run and owned a wonderful healing music label called Real Music, and they have just the greatest catalog of wonderful, wonderful music. And Terrence had asked me right from the beginning, he said, I meditate to your music every day. If you ever want a deal, let me know. And he told me that 10 years before. He told me as soon as it started, as soon as I started. And I thought, gee, maybe it's time to call Terrence. So in 2004, I did call Terrence, and we made an agreement, and I licensed him my catalog. And plus, I've recorded 5 albums for them, well, 2 collections and 3 new albums. So that's kind of a history of bringing, you know.
Right.
I came to the music.
It's a story that, well, first of all, spans 20 plus years. And I think also it's a story that, you know, it's kind of like you were meant to do this, you know, you kind of hear those things throughout, the fact that you were sitting on the beach and it just came to you, and, you know, you got the call from the producer and he said, I'm working for you. And it just all kind of came together is testament that you're doing what you should be doing and helping many people as a result. And I believe in those types of, events in our lives that make sense, and you got to do it. When did you start using the words musical healthcare? When did you start to use
okay.
it? Yeah.
Well, one of the things I did in 1996, I thought to myself, I need to do mailings to people who can, you know, to healthcare practitioners.
Right.
So I was using it to myself back then, and I started, I did a mailing to music therapists, and I would like to talk about music therapy because a lot of people aren't really aware. I did a mailing to music therapists back then, and they were very supportive of me, and music therapy is an established healthcare profession.
Mm-hmm.
Most music therapists have master's degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I believe to be certified, they must have a master's degree in music therapy. And there are some wonderful programs around the country for music therapy, including the University of Kansas. My friend, Dr. Alicia Clare, has run a program there for quite some time. And music therapists work with doctors. Their jobs are in hospitals. And it's just, they are angels. They're complete angels.
Mm-hmm.
Because they only use music based on evidence-based research. And what I mean by that is, they don't just use something because their neighbor said, oh, this music's relaxing. Excuse me. And they don't only use relaxing music. They use all kinds of different music. They work with autistic kids.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Music therapists work with young cancer patients. I had a family member who had a very near brush with death at a very young age in her 20s, and I called a music therapist in her town and asked them to go visit, and she went in and they sat around with a guitar and sang songs, you know.
Mm.
But that's been proven in evidence-based research. If you sing songs from a person's teenage years, you know, it can really perk them up. And in any case, I started hearing the term, I guess it would be around the year 2000, I started hearing the term sedative music. Excuse me. And their music therapists tend to divide music into stimulative music and sedative music. And I guess it's pretty logical if you think about it. One thing, you know, helps people slow down. Another one can help them perk up. So rather than take medication, sometimes music therapy is good enough.
Right.
Not always. I'm not suggesting that anyone get off medication, but there are researched and proven effects of using both relaxing music and stimulative music. It can affect heart rate, it can affect respiration, it can affect all kinds of bodily functions. I'm doing some research, and yesterday was working with a researcher where we use a measure of consciousness similar to what's used in an operating room, an anesthesia monitor, to measure how, you know, what relaxation music, what very slow music in my case, what that does to one's level of consciousness as compared to not having any music at all and just sitting there. And there is definitely our initial test. This is not published or anything, but my initial tests just at home are showing that there's a definitely a deeper level of relaxation that comes more quickly. So I think one of the purposes of music therapy is to help patients avoid what's called polypharmacy. Mm-hmm. Polypharmacy is a term where you're taking more than one medication,
right,
and then they interact with each other and cause side effects that might not otherwise be there. So if a patient can take less of a medication and use some music to relax, it's not saying, hey, get off medication,
right,
I'm not a
right.
doctor by any means, but even if you can reduce your your sedative dose by 25% and substitute some relaxing music, that can be helpful.
Absolutely.
Dr. William Dement is was the founder of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. I think Dr. Dement must be close to 80 years old now. He founded the Stanford University Sleep Clinic, and he also was one of the discoverers of REM sleep in Chicago many, many years ago. And, Dr. Dement kindly gave my sleep album, which was the 8th Liquid Mind album, sort of an endorsement, an unsolicited endorsement, where he said that as part of a pre-sleep routine, that this music could be very helpful.
Right.
And that was, you know, I think considering that someone of his stature
right.
would even listen to my music, much less suggest that it could be useful to people who had sleep disorders. And I don't ever suggest that anyone listen to the music while sleeping. I know a lot of people do, but I don't suggest that. But I do suggest that they could listen for 15 to 30 minutes before going to bed in combination with not eating and turning the lights down.
Right, not watching the computer or, you know, with your iPhone up to your face probably will help too, right?
Exactly. Exactly. And my website is liquidmindmusic.com. And on the home page, there is a little link that says sleep tips. So if any of your listeners have issues with sleep, I would suggest that they could click on that link. And some of those suggestions are out of Dr. Dement's book. Some are from other research studies. But they're all researched, you know, proven methods for helping one to relax.
No, it's interesting as I hear the applications of music and of specifically your music as well is, you know, relaxation and being able to replace music therapy for drugs, or, you know, I know that you're saying obviously that it's there's probably finite applications of that, but in probably in a lot of instances, probably more than we even know at this point, you know, we can use music to influence our physical state to such an extent, and it all kind of stems back to stress. And stress is a big focus of ours. You know, more and more they are linking stress with difficulties in conceiving. And it's not just, I mean, I think that that's just the tip of the iceberg with respect to how stress negatively influences our body just from top to bottom. And so I really find this interesting as I circle back to all of the research that we've done, or looking at the research that has been done. We haven't done specifically, you know, research in this area, but the fact that stress does play such an enormous role in anything we can do. In fact, I propose that in within 10 years that, you know, just like we take vitamins and we exercise on a daily basis for health, that either meditation or taking half an hour to reduce your heart rate and, you know, and on a conscious level to do it in a specific way, that you either meditate or you listen to relaxation music or whatever, you know, yoga, whatever it is that makes sense to you, that that's just as important as doing those other things. And it becomes a, you know, part of your healthy lifestyle. We call it the new relaxicize. That was a term that I coined because it's so important, I think, to your health and to your mindfulness, to just be feeling as if you're grounded again. And meditation is something that I do on a daily basis as well. Very simple, just what you had talked about earlier in terms of just simple breathing. But it's so what is your understanding? By the way, Dr. Bernie Siegel, when I first talked with him about working with us and developing these programs for fertility, his focus has been in cancer. But what he said is the music is so important. And he said, find something Baroque with a largo tempo. And he said, because that best mirrors your heartbeat. And I don't know if that means anything to you, or if you've ever heard that before, that specific type of music that he recommended. But just, you know, your feeling as to exactly what's going on in the body when we listen to music would be great to hear.
Yes. Well, I think what Bernie is probably, I can't speak for him, but I think what he might be suggesting is what we call entrainment. I'm trying to remember the pronunciation of this fellow's name, but Huygens, I think, was the fellow who discovered the pendulum clock back in the 15 or 1600s. And he discovered that when he put two pendulum clocks on the same wall, that they would entrain. And in biology, this happens when you put a bunch of women living in the same area, they will entrain in certain biological ways and so forth with their time of the month and everything. And so music can affect through entrainment. If I sit and listen to disco music with a very fast heartbeat, the music has a fast beat. It can be up to 135 beats per minute for the current dance music. I know because I work on productions for those, and I'm astonished at how fast it is. But when I sit and listen to that music, or when I'm working on it, my heart rate goes up. For exercising, I have a little pulse oximeter, and I can tell what it is. And when I sit and listen to slow music or very relaxing music, my heart rate can go down in the 60s. So there is an entrainment effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there's something that they call the Mozart effect. Mm-hmm. Don Campbell, I believe, is the composer, where they've determined that there's some relationship between kids and their ability to study and absorb information and the tempo of the music they're listening to. One area that has never been researched is ultra-slow music, which is what I write. And that's why we're doing research now. And also the Children's Hospital of Michigan has contacted me about doing some research with preemies in their neonatal unit using liquid mind. So I think there's definitely something to what Dr. Siegel says, and my music has no discernible tempo.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not going to make you smarter because it's not going to speed up your brainwave activity. I'm just at the beginning stages of researching this, and excuse me. And so I can't say in evidence-based research this happens, but I can say from the tests that I've done that there's definitely a slowing of consciousness and mm-hmm. a slowing of brainwave activity because it's the device we're using measures that to some degree. So there is this effect. I would like to just mention, if we have time, what the characteristics of my music are and why they're important.
Please.
One of them is that it has this ultra-slow, or some people call it a zero beat, meaning no beat going through, like no disco beat.
Right.
It's got that very slow tempo, which is... I think that's the primary characteristic. Another thing is what I call frequency restriction. Most folks know that there's like a treble and a bass and on your stereo at home, or maybe there's a treble, a mid-range, and a bass, or if you're really an audiophile, you might have a graphic equalizer hooked up.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the studio, when I record the music, I dip out, or I take out, I remove the higher levels of what I perceive to be irritating frequencies, those sort of high frequency screechy sounds. I make sure that those are dipped down so that Liquid Mind sounds very, very smooth. It's not going to sound like, you know, the television announcer on the evening news or something where it's coming through at what I would call a really high and mid-range frequency. So it emphasizes the lower frequencies. And there's actually, I found out later, I did this intuitively, but I found out later that there's actually scientific research, evidence-based research that supports that low frequencies are more relaxing. And the reason for this is when we are in the womb, we don't hear high frequencies. Mm-hmm. What we hear is very muffled, like
right.
And so music that emphasizes the low frequency is somehow, you know, that's what the theory is anyway, mm-hmm. of the research or mm-hmm. the theorem or whatever they call it. It posited that low frequencies are more relaxing. And that is published research. So my music emphasizes low frequencies. There's a complete absence of dominant rhythm and percussion. The reason for this is if you're trying to relax, let's supposing your phone rings. That causes in the human body what's called an arousal response. And that, you know, very simply means we're aroused.
Mm-hmm.
We were doing one of these tests yesterday. The person was listening, the subject was listening to some music, and a motorcycle went by. I live in Hollywood, California, and there's helicopters and motorcycles all over
the
place.
Right.
And so immediately the person was aroused. So in the Liquid Mind music, I actually shape every single note in every single track. It takes a long time to do a Liquid Mind album, at least five months to record. People think, oh, you're just holding slow chords, you know, it's no big deal. That's really not the case because I need to go through and remove any sign of arousal. Every note is slowly shaped. You know, some of the earlier albums were less so, but definitely the more recent albums are in that way. And I also wanted to say that in Liquid Mind is different than Noise. Noise doesn't really have what I would call musical values. And Liquid Mind does definitely have a melodic value in it. It's an experience, and I listened to a lot of the music, or I'd say sort of pseudo-music that's built and primarily made for relaxation, but it's, you know, they have noises and different subliminals
right.
in it. I don't use any of that because I don't enjoy listening to it, and
right.
that's why I've included melody. I wanted people to have something they could relate to. And the I guess the last thing I would say is this idea of blanket of sound. I don't like a lot of space in the Liquid Mind music, especially because people with anxiety. Liquid Mind has a masking effect. Whether it's slowing down the brain waves or keeping them busy thinking about this really slow music, it does relax you because you're just chilling out. And, you know, in my own case, my mind just slows down.
Mm-hmm. I love that that description, blanket of sound. I think that's right on.
Yeah, and a lot of people have criticized me for that, I'll be honest, and that's fine. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion, because certainly silence can be very quieting. But in today's world, if you live in an urban area,
right.
silence is almost non-existent.
Right. So what do you think, you refer to some of the other relaxation music that's out there that may have other sounds built in, like water falling, and that's absent from your music. But what about the water element? Have you ever thought about including that? I'm just curious.
Yes, I did. I've actually experimented with that, and I just felt that, and I think water type, you know, sounds of the ocean and sounds of the rain. And even the white noise or pink noise tapes, listen to me, CDs, MP3s.
Albums,
records. I've been in the music industry a long time. Right. They're all good. They're all good for some folks.
Right.
Some
right.
people prefer melodic music. I think it all works to some degree because, especially if it's continuous, it helps to mask out little disturbances that might arouse the consciousness. And if you're doing this, I love your term relaxicize. Is that what it
yes,
was?
Yes, yes.
that's terrific because that says everything. If you're doing a daily, and I definitely, that's part of my daily routine. If you're doing this relaxicize, you want to make the most of your time. Time
right.
is our most precious asset, as everyone knows, I'm sure. And if I have set aside 20 minutes to relaxicize, I don't want to be disturbed. So anything continuous is going to be beneficial. And then it's just a question of taste. Some people want to hear some pretty melodies. Other people would like to go to the ocean that
right.
day.
Right. Right. Yeah, music is a big component of what we have created. You know, I would call it maybe half of the value because the other half being the words and allowing people to follow along in this journey that we have created for them inside their body. So we've, crafted, really a story that they can follow along, that they help their body relax by using thoughts, you know, telling your body certain body parts to relax called, progressive body scan. And then we use visualization, specific physical visualization inside their body, which, you know, again, this speaks back a lot to Bernie Siegel and my work with him and how fundamental this could be for people trying to, you know, work out their health conditions on their own. Again, not saying that there isn't a time or a place for traditional medicine, absolutely, but this is something we can do that we feel in greater control of our bodies, and the response that we've gotten has been absolutely terrific. So we're on to something, and I do believe that the music, and you know, to be honest, I'm not a musician. This is an area that's I'm still learning, and so this hearing you explain, you know, really how music impacts our bodies is so helpful for me on a personal level, because it just gives me much more of a context when we create, you know, additional programs to bring this, more impactfully, to create better programs all the time. So there was something else I wanted to cover. Oh, just a quick question on your programs or in your music. What instruments do you use?
Well, that's kind of an interesting question. When I started out doing this, I was actually working with some orchestral musicians at the time, and also around that same period in time, I was going to UCLA studying orchestration, and I realized that, and I did some experimentation, that using orchestral instruments, I did not have the flexibility to extend the notes out as long as I wanted. My initial work was on synthesizers, and then I thought, well, I'll just bring in some orchestra players, and this will be really fun. But I realized there's a limit to how long people can hold their breath
and
hold a note. And it's also very difficult to hold notes in tune.
Right.
For long, long periods of time. If you have 10 violins, they can do that, but each one of them is a little bit out of tune at different times, and certainly a woodwind player or a brass player, they just simply can't do it with these long extended notes, and sometimes a chord will only change every 20 or 30 seconds in my music. So I realized early on that it was going to be electronic, it was going to be synthesizers, but that I could use my knowledge of that I had learned at UCLA and also from my mentors, Bruce Swedien, and also producer Ken Scott, who kind of mentored me when I was really young in the music industry about how to create sound. And I just used all that information to try and make something that I felt was even more smooth than live instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So I've ever only used one live instrument, and that was a flute player, a friend of mine, works at the American Music Therapy Association. She's a wonderful music therapist herself and works in emergency situations, on an emergency response team. When there are crises, she goes in as a music therapist with a team of therapists, but that's a side point. And her name is Barbara Els, and she's a really terrific flute player, and so I invited her to play on the last album. And she was able to hold the notes out very long. I think she plays on a couple of pieces.
Is that something you can loop almost? I mean, this is a curiosity.
I could, and actually I think I did extend some of her notes.
Right.
the music is primarily electronic. However, since the sixth album, which is called Spirit, Liquid Mind 6 Spirit, I number all the albums, most of them, I've used live voices as well, and there are three singers. I sing, and my friend Seven Whitfield and another friend by the name of A.J. Teshin, we all three sing. And what that's done is the sound of the human voice just adds a little organic quality. I mix it in with the electronics. So you're actually hearing human voices, and I do have to loop and extend the notes.
Right.
we'll sing the notes one at a time, you know, until we run out of breath. And then I loop it, and I wherever the change is. It's very, very tedious process, but it brings an organic kind of a warmth to the music that I really like. And, anything to make the music more comforting, because people that listen to this music, a lot of them are in psychological or emotional or physical stress.
Right. You know, and I know that there are studies being done about this, which is the opposite problem in hospitals today, which is how loud they are with the machines and with the intercom system, and that there's no concept of day and night. And I think people who are in hospitals absolutely need rest. They need quiet as much as possible. And it's a real problem, I think. But, you know, I think that that's, you know, there are ways that you can. In fact, I've got a really close friend of mine whose younger brother was just in an absolutely horrific car accident, lucky to be alive, and was in ICU for 2 weeks. And she actually sent him. We have a blissful sleep program, which uses, again, our mix of music and words. And, you know, because I do think it's absolutely important, critical, really, for people in that state to, you know, really get as much rest as they can. So, and with that, I think we're about, we're almost reaching an hour, but this has been absolutely so terrific. And I just wanted to say that I am very excited about the idea of Chuck and I were talking about creating we would be licensing Chuck's music from one of his albums to create a walking meditation for women's health. Could be applied to fertility, could be applied for anybody. So I'm really excited about that idea. And it's on the drawing table, just with so many other things as well we want to get done. Life is, like you said, time is one of our precious assets. I wish I could wave a wand and get all my ideas done, but it's like, oh. But we breathe and we just find time to relax, because it could stress us out, but we're not going to let it.
Yes, indeed. Well, Joanne, thanks so much for the opportunity. And to address, to address the folks that you work with, and I wish them all the best. If I also just wanted to mention that there is a free 5-minute MP3 sample. If you go to the Liquid Mind website, which is liquidmindmusic.com, and the folks, anyone can just click on. There's a picture there. It says free download, and they can get a sample and hear what Liquid Mind is about.
And all of your albums are also easily downloadable from iTunes, correct?
Yes.
You just look up
iTunes
Liquid Mind.
Is a great way. Right. iTunes, Amazon,
right?
Basically every site,
right?
Every digital site, 40 or 50 sites.
And we'll include all of
it. And they can get it at realmusic.com as well.
Oh, okay. Good.
Which is a great way.
Is it realmusic.com, just as
yep.
it sounds? And we'll also include, when I publish this, it'll be as part of a blog post, and I'll have all of the links, including the links to your, you've got a great interview about your background and called, you know, Anxiety and Panic interview on Anxiety
sure.
and Panic.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, your top 10, I think, or maybe 11 tips for reducing stress, and you talk about the clearing meditation that you did. You talked about journaling, which I talk about a lot. You know, getting professional help, listening to music, stopping all caffeine. I like the thought police. You know, stopping the huge for me as well. And it's like one of those things I work on a daily basis myself. So I will have links to all this wonderful information as well. So Chuck, thank you.
Well, thank you, Joanne. You have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.